This is Rakadex After Hours.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rack Addicts After Hours. We've actually got a new friend and colleague with us today. Luke is here. We've got Telmo. We've got Pete, and I'm Ben. We're going to do a quick whiz round. Has anybody had an interesting week? Because I certainly haven't. Pete, you have had a certain novation happening, I believe.
Well, yes. On the last week's podcast, I was stating how I was going to buy the Zen Delay, but unfortunately, I have a new romance in my life, and it's the Novation Summit, and that's grabbed all my attention. So I've got one on order, and that's where my complete focus is at the moment.
Yeah, because you picked up a second-hand Peak and then almost immediately decided it wasn't enough for you.
Yeah, that's the case. I mean, the Summit's been sort of billed as two Peaks in one chassis with a keyboard, but from my examination and listening to it, it's so much more. There's a certain synergy that you're getting by having the two units in there, or the sum of the two units, but there are other sets and functionality in there, plus the fact it's got the ability to layer, so you can get some...
Yeah, there's no bi-timbral stuff on the Peak, is there?
No. So, yeah, that's where I'm at. So I'm all... I'm not sure when I'm actually going to get my... unit,
but yeah, with a certain virus throwing a bit of a spanner in the works on that one, unfortunately.
Yes, supply chains and all that sort of stuff, they're slightly interrupted, and we'll just have to see how long that continues for, to be honest.
Hopefully you get your buttery filter sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Telmo, anything exciting?
Hello.
Oh, hey.
So, exciting for me this week was doing a bunch of editing. So much editing. So, as we mentioned a few... podcasts ago, my band P-Gypt, we're releasing an EP. These two tracks, we're on the verge of... Well, we just finished the first bits of recording. So all I've been doing is sitting on my desk until late doing editing. So all those bits and bobs...
What are you doing, like comping takes and all this kind
exactly,
of stuff?
Exactly, deciding what takes should go, fading in, fading out. Oh, this is a bit too quiet. Oh, this is a bit too loud. I'm going a bit mad. I'm generally going a bit mental.
What were you doing? Did you have like a tempo track so you can do a bit of quick swipe type stuff, or are you going to have to do a classical edit style?
I'd rather do the classical editing style.
So what do you do? You kind of vibe it when you're doing each take and
exactly. So I go through every track.
Metronomes with Telmo.
Oh no, that's another thing because I do use the click a lot. But the thing is that because there's different time signatures, you have to set the time signatures with it. So I use Ableton Live. Mm. For those who don't know, you can set the time signature in certain sections, which is obviously really important if you want to record drums, which is the next stage. So I want to make sure that the drummer gets everything proper as well.
Oh, do you not go drums first on this one?
Not on this one. Oh, not on this one. We're doing the other way around. We're just trying experimenting with different techniques as well. We're doing a mix of home recording with live recording, with studio recording. So yeah, hopefully it will be quite an interesting one. That's pretty much all I've been doing this week. Asking you, Luke.
Quickly, before we jump to Luke, sorry, is there a date for a P-Gypt EP, or are you just kind of, it's going to happen when it happens?
We're aiming for end of March.
Cool. So, nice. We'll let the listeners know as soon as that's on the internet somewhere.
Keep your eyes peeled, everyone.
Lovely. Luke, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Yeah, welcome to the shed that we sit in the pub. what's been happening your week?
My week has been fairly regular. I'm in a band called Birdsworth. I'm the drummer for that band. I'm also the percussionist for a sort of hip hop funk group called Coco La Funk.
Oh, didn't know that one.
Birdsworth, we've got our new album coming out hopefully sometime very soon. We haven't set an official date for it yet, but we're just finishing up. Really, we are doing the last few edits for some tracks. We're putting in harmonies or changing things that we were happy with originally, that we listened back to and gone, well, actually that needs to be adjusted or could be stronger, because the vocals are so important for our music. It's essentially the focus in the mix tends to be for us, bass, drums and vocals. Everything else kind of sits in the middle and adds color and flavor, but certainly the vocals are the key part of that. So we're just getting through that, really. And once we've done that, then we'll be getting close to finishing. We're having our our album mastered by Andy, who I think is a...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's a regular man at Burfield Recording Studios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's he's been really cool, really supportive so far, and we've had some great stuff back from that. The mastering process is working very nicely the way he's doing it. So, yeah, this week we were just finishing off that, just setting some dates to do some vocals and to finish the last few tracks, really. Yeah.
Ooh, and you had a music video come out recently, didn't you?
Yes, we did, yes. The video for Rendezvous, that was shot in a very, very cold car park last January. that was very, very freezing. And so the faces, if you watch the end of the video, there's some dance moves and there are some real tortured faces. Those are real because we
real
were so
pain.
Cold we couldn't move properly or fast enough. The cameraman was pushing us on and so
it's
on.
Not the first video that you guys did in the car park, right?
No, it is the first
is
video
it?
We did in the car park.
Pretty
but it's
sure. Oh, right.
It's certainly not the warmest video we've done.
Right, okay.
Next time we're looking for somewhere with heating.
Okay.
Maybe in a
central
sauna.
Heating.
Nice one. I've got a quick little thing that I ran across on one of the Eurorack Facebook groups. So this is a bunch of massive nerds talking about modular synths. And this guy called Zach made a post that just it seemed very strange to me. I'm going to read it for you and let me know what you think. So remember, this is a modular synthesizer Facebook group. He says, apologies for what might be a hot take. I don't really know what that means, the lingo that these young people are using. Anyway, but as someone who continues to study and play Bach on various instruments, I don't sense a lot of his musical ideas coming through in a MIDI sequenced patch on Eurorack. I don't know why he expects that anyway. Many times I've heard hypotheses on what Bach could do on a modern synth, and I'm convinced it's not this. Much respect to everyone who's entertaining, who's entering and dividing out this Bach MIDI data, as this practice can be fun and enlightening as all F. I'm not going to swear on this podcast. But it sounds very unmusical to me. We lose so much of his music when it's played back as note data. Bach's brilliance is displayed primarily by his incredible, borderline perfect counterpoint and harmony. When Bach is sequenced, any opportunity for a musician to emphasize or draw attention to this brilliant writing seems to go out the window in favor of savvy sound selection, which we modular heads love. I'm not advocating for anyone to cease Bach sequencing. Rather, as a Bach fanatic, I'm highly interested in how we as a modern musical community can interpret his music to the best of our collective ability. Dig into the music theory, watch actual musicians play his music on the original instrument. If you pay attention, your ears will learn something. If anyone cares, I can expand on what I think we can do better. But first, your thoughts. Telmo, I'm looking at you, just because I know you're much more musically educated than I am. I don't know why he cares. It's very confusing to me. Why? Well, firstly, he makes a point that it is kind of a cool educational idea to try and make Bach on a modular synth. But he's saying, "Oh, nobody can top Bach on a modular." Like, what's he chatting about? I'm really confused. What do you think about this?
I think he's got a great thing for Bach. Really, he's talking. He sees Bach as the pinnacle of music that has been ever made. Bach is insane. Bach is great. He had massive importance in the music that we see these days. For those who never heard Bach, he's a Baroque period. This is pre-classical music. He's a Baroque period composer. He developed his technique by writing Vivaldi's music when he got a hold of some of his manuscripts. That's how we kind of found out, oh, this is great stuff. We should do concertos like this. And he really set the scene for what we see after that with classical music and then with romantic as well. But you can't really top Bach stuff. You can't really compare it because he was playing with an harpsichord. He was using the techniques that he was using at the time. However, if we talk about, you know, modular music and electronic music in general is based off sounds. Sounds that we're still exploring up to this day. I've seen performers using Clair de Lune. I've seen performers doing Chopin in the synthesizers, and that really is interesting, yes. But until what extent is new? You can use Bach's techniques for every genre of music, I think, not necessarily just for this particular style that he's mentioning. I do get his feelings for Bach.
You understand his obsession, his passion.
His obsession.
It warrants it.
But yeah, you can say the same thing for Beethoven. You can say the same thing for Rachmaninoff. But that depends which sort of input, which the output will depend on the instrument that you're using. Maybe that's something that, you know, someone out there could explore.
It just kind of cracks me up. He's basically saying, like, oh, we can't make anything better than Bach ever did using a modular synthesizer. Why bother with
that's
using
bonkers.
One at all? If we can't beat Bach, there's no point.
Be a bit more reasonable than that, I think.
It kind of cracked me up anyway. Yeah. I hope you found that reasonably funny. I did have a small little something that I wanted to ask everybody. Pete recently introduced me to a certain orator, I guess is the right word. Christopher Hitchens, is it Hitchens, isn't it?
Yes, Christopher Hitchens.
And I've always been a Stephen Fry fan, partly because of just his brain in general, but he just has a wonderful voice. I grew up listening to the Harry Potter audiobooks, as many people have. And then Pete sent me a few YouTube links, and I was so stunned by his eloquence, just the quality, the tone of his speaking voice, and this brutal intelligence, which was pretty cool. But what I wanted to ask everybody is, do you have a favorite speaking voice that you wish could read you bedtime stories every day? Because I totally do. And slightly further away from a human voice, sounds in general, do you have a specific sound that you hear? And you're like, oh, that is the sound. So I'll say, I think, oh man, I've just forgotten his name. It's amazing. See if you guys can guess, not guess. He played Bilbo in The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
Oh.
Not The Hobbit, the old Bilbo in the first Hobbit. Look at this. Luke knows, but he can't remember. And it's one of those frustrating things when you can't remember the name.
Of course, mate.
He's an alien.
He's great.
The cyborg.
It's Ian. I saw Ian something.
Ian Holm. There
Ian
we go.
Holm.
Thank you.
Thank
Ian
you
Holm.
So
I
much.
Love Ian Holm's voice. And in terms of sounds, you know when you get a can opener and you clip it on, you get that little, that rumbly thing as you twist it. I love that sound, the little rumble.
Oh.
Over to you guys. This Who's got a favourite voice and a favourite sound, please?
I quite like, if I'm falling asleep, I quite like the sound of the rain, or weirdly enough, just white noise.
You're a white noise fan.
Yeah. Mm. I commonly use audiobooks or podcasts as something I do in my spare time as relaxation, and it's really nice to fall asleep listening
now
to something.
Now you
like
too
that.
Can fall asleep to the sound of your own voice on Rack Addicts After Hours.
Dreadful.
Which, Pete, you had a frightening experience
that
doing
didn't
that.
Work for me at all. I was actually went to sleep listening to the podcast because I was just checking, make sure it had uploaded properly. And I must have drifted off, and I came to with the sound of my own voice, but it wasn't in my head.
That wasn't a dream, was it?
No, it was very disconcerting. Very unpleasant. It wasn't a pleasant experience, I have to say. Really,
oh,
it was quite horrible. For whatever reason, not because it was.
I'm not going to try it. I'm scared.
Yeah,
now.
It wasn't. It was psychologically twisting.
Oh, no. Do you have,
it's all wrong.
Yeah, favorite podcast for just drifting off to, Luke.
I have a favorite podcast, not for drifting off to, because I try and listen
try and enjoy
to it in detail.
It, yeah.
It would be called The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. It's a kind of comedy. It lapses into comedy, but that's not their mission. It's a podcast that essentially is a kind of a watchdog for pseudoscience or malpractice, shall we say, where things have like where people might say like. They often combat or try and at least provide a better perspective on things like climate change or matters of science. And it's a really interesting podcast because they go through all sorts of things. They're qualified people. They've written a book. The host is a doctor, an MD in America, Stephen... I've forgotten his surname.
Stephen Surname Man.
Yes. Yeah. But they're a fantastic group of people, and their podcast is really illuminating. It's actually kind of helped me become more patient and more self-aware through the course of listening to it, because I was quite an ardent advocate of science and certain things and never really considering what people might... you know, what their opinions and how they might differ to mine, and you know whether there could be common ground. But while the podcast is all about finding what's close to the truth, because understanding certain aspects of science it's not necessarily about finding the right answer, it's about finding the least wrong answer. And I think when you think about that, and it applies to arts as well, it helps me to understand that I might not like certain pop music, I might not like certain theories or movements, but finding common ground with people helps you to either introduce them to ideas that you champion and believe in, and can help you to see things from their perspective too, even if you disagree.
Yeah, nice. Which is nice. So you reckon that's helped your patience with certain spiritual healing type customers that might ask for percussion advice from you?
Well, I'm still working on the patient side for that one. I'm not really a fan of energy healing, but you know, but then I see the psychological aspect of it, and if it works for them, and it helps them feel better about small parts of their day, and that adds up to a better feeling overall. Well, as long as they're taking medication for anything serious as well, I don't mind, and I'm happy for them.
Telmo, your turn. Favourite voices and sounds.
The sound of a gong is great. I'm not going to say it's one of my favourite ones, but it's great. I don't know. I found nature fascinating. For me, I grew up by the sea. I was brought up with the sound of waves crashing into the rocks very heavily. So that is a sound that really relaxes me and puts me back into my roots. It puts me back into a place that I feel like I belong. That is definitely the sort of sounds that I would if I want to relax, or if I just, you know, just go on YouTube and go like waves crashing for 10 hours. And, you know, that's all I need.
Listen avidly for the full 10 hours without doing anything else.
I don't even move. In terms of voices, Morgan Freeman does it for me. If I want to relax. You know, everyone loves Morgan Freeman.
Rich.
There's something about Joe Rogan as well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's something about Joe Rogan. I don't know. It doesn't need to be necessarily relaxing. In this case, it's more of interest. It's probably more of like a psychological thing because of obviously the sort of people that he brings down to his show as well. There's something about the guy when he speaks, I shut up.
Yeah, well, he's hosting interesting people, so you hear his voice, you know there's going to be an interesting conversation around him.
Exactly. I also listen to other podcasts like Adam Buxton or The Musician's Podcast, where you've got, you know, interesting people that come down and share the experiences of the music business. That will do for me. I'm not a guy that spends a lot of time listening to podcasts, mostly because time is very limited. I tend to spend more time listening to music or to sounds. But yeah, that'll do it for me, really. How about you, Pete?
For me, it's rather like Ben and Luke. It's the spoken word, and it does really matter how sort of tonally how they sound. I had a astrophysics course by a gentleman called Alex Vilipenko, I believe. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. He's an astrophysicist, a US astrophysicist. And for some reason, I had a 40-part course, so it was quite intense, and that was a very good sleep aid to have bragging. But I migrated to, who Ben mentioned earlier, Christopher Hitchens, so I have a copy of his book, God Is Not Great, where he has a bit of a polemic, where he dismantles all religion.
Quite savagely as well, with Hitchens' style.
Yeah, primarily
takes their prisoners.
Using very, his arguments tend to centre around morality, because there's various, obviously, famous atheists like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and so forth, and they all tend to approach the subject with a different. I mean, the end game is to. I don't know what they're. Well, basically discredit it, and sort of their mission is to. State that they feel it's a man-made thing that is utilised. Sometimes it can be used for good, but there are so many scenarios where it isn't, and it's used for sort of nefarious purposes. So, but his argument, as I said earlier, was very much based on the sort of morality of it, and he's very learned on the subject, and in a lot of cases, especially when he's when he was alive, unfortunately passed away in. I think it was either 2011, 2012. But prior to that, he would take the opportunity, especially when he'd written various books, to tour the deep south of America and debate various religious zealots of different ilks. And invariably, he would know more about the subject than they did. And he would skillfully slice and dice them over various points. But here, as you said earlier, Ben, he has got a particularly... enthralling voice, sort of very low timbre, and it has a very sort of distinct openness about it, and then there is that feeling of the intellect coming across as well.
I think that the way you notice the power of his intelligence is that he never seems to be searching for words. I mean, you could be as prepared as you like, but in a debate kind of situation, you've got to be on your toes and, you know, changing tack quite fast. But he doesn't. He just begins. And, yes, and never seems to waver. That's what really, really grabbed me, and I think really shows his brain.
Something for us to take as communicators.
In the US, he was also a political commentator. He wrote for several publications, including Vanity Fair and The Atlantic and several other outlets, and he'd been established over there since, I would say, about the mid-80s onwards. Mm. And he was almost a sort of, certainly a celebrity on the speaking circuits on the various subjects. So apart from sort of a disdain for religion, he would certainly commentate about various aspects of British and American politics and other things. He was a bit regarded as a bit of a contrarian, a bit of a polemicist. The only source now of anything similar would be his brother, which is Peter Hitchens. Unfortunately, he's
on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, he's completely on the other side of the fence on most of the arguments.
Although the apples do fall far from the tree on occasion.
They both started off in a reasonably similar place at university. They were both Marxists, but they sort of moved away to the neocon side of things and so forth. But yes, very sort of... and I've listened to... it must be hundreds of times now. But I find that once you've got to that stage with an audiobook and you know it that well, you go away from that point where you're actually listening to it because you're so imbibed by it. You're just almost sailing on the tonality of it. You just let it wash over you, and it just has that kind of...
It's very interesting because you've mentioned the low tonality that he's got. Isn't that something about like the tone of someone that's so low that really that there's something relaxing about it more than the high pitch? Is this psychological? What do you guys think?
I'm not too sure. I definitely know that a lot of stories set by low frequencies when people are thinking about, oh, how can sound physically affect us? You know, the brown note being a famous thing.
Yeah.
Luke, you'll be familiar with a gong bath being a strange phenomenon. I've been to a bass bath, which is the same idea, just a sine wave going from, you know, super, super low, it's about 400 hertz and back.
No one does mandolin baths, you see what I mean?
Oh, man, I'd love a mandolin bath, actually. But no, it's something about the low frequencies that people just seem to go for. Maybe there's some kind of evolutionary something going on that we just kind of seek it out.
Well, low frequencies tend to be a lot more physical. You could feel them. Obviously, you can hear the high frequency, but it's very rarely you feel a high frequency. But
of course.
Invariably,
if you did, there'd be a problem.
And obviously, you go below a certain frequency, you can only feel it and you can't hear it.
Mm.
So it may be the sort of certain particular low frequencies hit, start resonating with, I don't know. I think.
Yes.
I suppose there's a physical aspect to it. The cone is moving more air, therefore that impacts on the body. You feel it more. I have an anecdote regarding a mandolin, actually.
Please fire away. I love mandolins.
So my very first band, or probably not my very first, but my very second, I think, we used to rehearse in my friend's maisonette. We had a drum kit. It was all full of pillows and so on. And we would basically just write these really trashy rock songs. It was great. But one particular evening, we got out an electric mandolin. And of course, it had to go into the Big Muff pedal, because why not?
Oh man, that must be an amazing noise!
It was. Somewhere far away, there's a recording on an old broken iPod, a voice recording of us playing. The drums were very kind of Bonham-esque, very simple, but it was atrocious. But it was a unique sound.
I need to try that.
A mandolin through a Big Muff, a decent Russian Big Muff as well.
Oh yeah.
So it was great. Just a really strange sound.
I can't even begin to imagine that kind of noise. What's interesting, when you get lower frequencies going through any kind of fuzz pedal, it doesn't work so well. But imagine that more higher pitch kind of stuff might have made a pretty interesting distortion.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was bombastic.
What a word. Lovely.
Well, we need to find that. We need to find out.
It's not a terribly good example of playing, but yeah. But no, we were having fun. We were experimenting, and it was a fun thing to do. And I never thought of using a mandolin in a rock band before. So That was fun.
More people should try. Yeah. I've got one more little nugget, but if anybody else has something they'd like to chat about.
Yeah, I just wanted to switch back because I was just sort of trying to catch up with something when you were talking about the Bark and synthesizers. And I just thought it was, while you were chatting, I just thought it was a bit ironic that it was Bark that actually, or Bark Music that popularized or made the synth popular in the first place.
Switched on Bark. Yeah, of course.
Wendy Carlos.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. So it was ironic that he actually mentioned Bark as being his sort of bone of contention.
I wonder if he's actually heard that album. I haven't. Is it good? Have you heard it?
Yeah, I have. It was kind of the thing when it came out, and it's basically Bark on a Moog.
Yeah, was that would have been modular Moog era.
Yes,
it? Yeah.
It was a modular Moog, but it. I mean, she's a very skilled player, and it was a very, very successful album in its time.
Very successful. Like a great idea.
Yeah,
it's got to be up there with Jean-Michel Jarre's Oxygen.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
I'm trying to think, Tubular Bells. It was kind of that ilk where you got an album that dominated the charts for years.
Yeah, I've actually heard a couple of different, I guess, classical music ports to electronic. One of the ones that I'm just trying to find the composer for is Piano Phase. I don't know if you ever heard that one. Basically, it's four parts. I think the original... Oh, of course, it was Steve Reich. Who else would it be?
Steve Reich.
Yeah, so I don't know what the original had, but this particular one was two identical piano parts at the really, really slight differences in tempo. So you're talking, if one, just for example, is 120 BPM, the other is 120.01. Really, really long piece, and I imagine would require listening, if you're performing it, that is, listening on... in-ear monitors to your metronome and trying to tune out the other player next to you. But you get some really interesting things. It'd be like for any guitarists if you change the time on a delay by just a tiny amount, and then you see how the feel changes. But this can go on for about, I think, the modular version that I heard was about a 40-minute video of these two identical melodies just slowly shifting. You get these really interesting kind of flowing... Because you can get those delays which are really regular and rhythmical, and you get those ones that kind of cascade into each other. Yeah. And it just goes between those, and different harmonies pop out. It's really fascinating. I'd love to see that played by human beings on a piano one day. That's the only other classical music on a synthesizer experience that I've had and really enjoyed before.
I would like to take it the other way around. I've recently been exposed to the music of Griset. He's known for being the last great French composer. In the 70s, he released this piece called Espace Acoustique, I think. It's basically a piece that is based on the harmonic series. So instead of making a music for the harmonic sense of it, what he did is that he had a drone sound, and this is, I'm being very simplistic in the way that I'm explaining. You have a drone sound, and all of the other instruments were imitating the harmonic series of that sound. So imagine you have the bass doing a G, and the cellos and the violins and the timpanis and all of the other instruments were basically grabbing that sound and taking it in the harmonic series sense mathematically into a higher pitch, or it would be the other way around. So it's more of like, it sounds, the piece itself sounds like a synth, but it's actually a full orchestra.
That's really cool. Who's I'm going to quickly do a Google so I can listen to that when I get home. What was it called?
Griset.
How do I spell that? I'm bad at
these
things.
G-R-I-S-E-Y, I think.
I-S-E-Y. What was the piece?
Espace Acoustique.
Lovely stuff.
So
have a listen.
Do check for that. I was astonished when I listened to that. It's just insane.
For the non-educated but still musical nerd, harmonic series.
That would be me.
And me as well. So harmonic series, I think I know what it sounds like. Do all of the harmonics above whatever your fundamental is, do they actually land on musical notes, or are they sometimes... weird frequencies that do sound kind of right, but would that then not fit into a regular temperament piano?
So we need to define first what is a music note.
It's getting deep now.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to go into there, but basically, if you hit a C, the harmonic series is the overtones that that C initially will create. So it could be, I don't know exactly the ratios, but it could be, normally I think it's a fifth, the overtone that you hear, and then it's an octave, and then it's an octave and, and three quarters, and then the ratio starts to get smaller and smaller. So that it's basically the overtones that you hear that you could possibly hear, but our ear is just way too not sensitive enough to capture all of those.
Not individually. From my understanding, they then make up the timbre of the sound rather than a pitch.
Yes, but okay. that is simply it's the same way when you do a harmonic on a guitar. It's the same principle as well. It's the overtones basically.
And a sawtooth waveform having even or odd harmonics and a square wave having the other. I can never remember which way round they go.
But exactly, yeah. Right. You see where I'm going. Yep.
Yay, we've learnt some people a thing. Thank you, Telmo, for imparting your wisdom on us. No. Any more for any more? Are we gonna wrap up this evening?
You not have anything else?
No, because it didn't work in my head. So we're all good. It was... I will do it quickly, but it's not the most discussable thing. Anyway, I've been searching for a word, or possibly a phrase, that has escaped me recently. So I'm interested in... Okay, actually, I'm going to attack this in a different way. Imagine in your minds, gentlemen, you know, you get those handmade ceramic mugs, and they'll be kind of glazed. It's quite rustic. They'll have kind of a glazed bit, and then there'll be that unglazed bit. So it's got that rough texture, and it's got that smooth texture.
Normally sort of earthenware type.
Yep. Very earthenware type, very handmade, all this kind of thing. So rustic is a good word. Through trying to find the word that I will explain in a bit, I've discovered the Japanese or Buddhist philosophy wabi-sabi, which is talking about... words. Impermanence, imperfection, and enjoying those things. But the word I'm looking for is just a simple adjective or small descriptive phrase that describes satisfying objects like that mug I've tried to get you to imagine in your minds, like my mum's walking boots that she's had for longer than I've been alive, objects of a high degree of craftsmanship that you know will last a long time, that can be repaired, but also a word for the satisfaction of owning and using those things. Any ideas? Because this does come across the synthesizer and general music tech world a lot. If you have a really nice handmade guitar, it's incredibly tactile. It would be a joy to use and play. A lot of microphones have this aspect to them. There's also a certain kind of... imagine you pick up a Neumann U87. There's a gravitas to such an object, but I haven't figured out the words for it. Any takers?
Well, we have essentially had a lot of when you have a when you look through a thesaurus, we have danced around this word
and trying to find the word.
It's,
yeah.
I mean, is there going to be actually something in English, or is it going to be one of these words that's only expressed in German or even Japanese or something?
Yeah, if it's in another language, I'll take it. But
I'm struggling to think of it.
Tell me, what have you got?
Oh yeah.
It's because, I mean, German probably, there's probably a word for it in German. It will be, you know, so many syllables long. But if it exists, I'll take it.
The only one I can think of, which is used in a different context, and I'm going to struggle to try and pronounce it, is the Scandinavian word for being comfortable and cozy. Is
it hygge?
Hygge.
I don't know how to pronounce it either. That is definitely another aspect of it. And I don't know if I need to maybe narrow my search field, but that's the sort of word I'm thinking.
Something that says it in one word, that sums it up.
It's exactly the kind of thing I'm going for. I don't know. What formats can people comment on this podcast? SoundCloud. Is it? It's not on SoundCloud, is it?
Yes.
It is on SoundCloud. If you're listening on SoundCloud, or if you're not, go to SoundCloud. Please help me. I've been trying to find this word for like a year and a half, and it's evaded me.
Well, they can always leave. Yeah. If they find the podcast through Facebook, they could always leave comments there.
If you can, get in touch. Please help me. I need that
word. The mission is to find the word for Ben.
Your mission is my mission. Let's all get our mission
perhaps
together.
Perhaps this can become a weekly segment.
A Seekly Wegment to find Ben's word of satisfaction. So thank you very much for listening. And if you do find that word, please let us know. We'll see you on the next episode of Rack Addicts After Hours.